regarding the DNS segment, which is very widely as well. I'm trying to convince them to actually run it. The theory of the DNSSEC, I'll start with it, then we'll be demonstrating bomb. I'll show you how the NL is actually running an experiment now that actually registers secure the names on skip before, because that time is actually developed. And I'll tell about the DNSSEC deployment that we are doing. We're currently running about 150 zones in DNSSEC. And the last part will be difficult as well, because people have been quite messy with the network, and I'm now in GPRS to get things running. Okay, so this is a typical view of what happens when somebody asks a question from a name server. You actually start with your client, the scope resolver, who asks the question. In this case, you're starting out with freeze1.nl. Goes from a file, knows that a root server is supposed to be, looks it up, gets some glue, talks to another resolver, the resolver talks to the root server, who gets a record for NL, gets some more glue, continues, gets the record for freeze1.nl from the NickNL server, gets a NickNL entry, which points to then. So it continues with the freeze1 NS record, gets potential more glue, and runs the gets the A record. So we're doing about 8 questions. We get glue 3 times. And there's a lot of things where what's this question?
Now, if you look from an organizational point of view, it's even worse. I just try to list every party involved if I do a query for a www.freeze1.nl. And of course, you get from whoever owns the root to today or tomorrow to the root servers who operate them, the TLD servers, the NL registry, and then all the parts of the network that actually have these servers on them. And it ends up to our network, and then finally gets to the registrant. I counted 23 organizations, and this is not counting all the insecurities in BGP, and perhaps ending up somewhere completely different besides these organizations. So we want to protect against all these things, and we want to get rid of as many organizations and technical problems in the middle. So we need to do two things. One is we need to protect the integrity of the data so that nobody actually changes it. And we need to make sure that it actually comes from the person who is supposed to tell it to us. Now, if we take a closer look again at the path, first we're talking to the DHCP server. We turn on our laptop, we talk to the DHCP server who gives us answers. So that's our first vulnerability. DNSSEC isn't really meant to fix that. There are people who are doing MAC address things on a local loopback to protect that part. You could at some point start verifying things with additional options in the DHCP server, but right now it's still assumed that that's a secure connection. The second one, you have to, once the DHCP server gives you your IP address and your name servers and everything, and assuming that's all trusted, you actually need to talk to those name servers. I don't see any other way of securing that than running it yourself, like running a caching name server on your own machine that does all the queries so that you can verify all the DNSSEC extensions. As soon as you talk to a secure resolver elsewhere, your connection to that resolver is still unencrypted, unsecure. So we come to the resolver itself, communication to the net. Then there are some problems further down, which of course is the ones that we're actually trying to address. Name server communication, all the other networks, and all the records served by other people. So Mordis talked about this. So two important things actually between name servers and actually name servers and clients are the zone transfers and the dynamic updates. And the zone transfers can be easily secured. The dynamic update is a bit more difficult because every single person will have their own key and they will need to actually somehow secure it, and then you need to put that into a zone, and we'll see how that becomes really complicated because we are doing things like sorting the zone before assigning it. Protecting the zone files itself in the caches, we'll see how cryptography will help us there. So there's TSIG and SIG0, which are ways to secure name server to name server communication. We don't use it, frankly, because we trust our path between the two name servers. We use an IPsec tunnel between them, or we use SCP to copy the files to the slave. So we don't really need to secure the transfer, the AHFR itself. And of course, because we're serving all the zones signed, even if that transfer is plain text, and even if someone would change it, then the signature is wrong at the slave. So you would still find out that someone has been messing with your data. So to me, this doesn't sound too important to secure, except that we need this for the dynamic updates, because you connect with your laptop, you want to say what your host name is, or you want to allow relay for mail or whatever. So for DHCP client, this is very useful. And then there are two systems, TSIG, which is a pre-shared key system, you just agree a secret and use that to communicate, or use SIG0, which is a real public key system. So using SIG0 is hopefully is what's going to take off. So this is the essence of DNSSEC, basically. We have four new records, and that's what we need to get everything done. The key record, which is the public key that we use for signing things, that we also need to publish, because otherwise you cannot check the signatures. The actual signatures over the data. The next record, which we'll use for denial of existence, which I'll come back to. And the DS record, which is the most controversial record, because that's used for building a chain between the different name servers that basically have nothing to say about each other's zone. And there's a new flag in the answer section, if you're interested. So you can see that the data is actually secured and was verified to be secure. But it's not protected by signature. So if you talk to a resolver and it says, well, the AD flag is dead, everything is secure. Well, yeah, still someone else could have just flipped a bit. So it's nice for debugging, but it's no security. So this is the actual key record. For people familiar with DNS, I hope people are familiar with DNS, otherwise this might be a bit complex. We've got the label, the TTL, the IN for internet, the key is the name, and we've got flags, protocol, algorithm, key material. Flags, in this case, we'll just use authentication and confidentiality, and that's like added up together, 256 bits. Then in this case, we have this key that you see here for FreeSwan.nl is a DNSSEC key, so it has protocol 3, and the algorithm we use is RSA SHA-1. And then we've got the key material and the key IDs for us humans to be able to sort of figure out where all our keys are going. By the way, if anyone has questions, just please interrupt me. So this is what it's really all about. We have the key in our zone, and now we're going to sign with that key. So we've got again the label. In this case here, I'm showing two NS records for FreeSwan.nl and the signature over it. One reason for putting these together is that we want to, the zone is going to explode with new records. We've got key records, we have SIG records. And people like VeriSign are really upset when you add one record per domain in their zone. Their servers are not very happy if you add things. So one of the optimizations is that since we're always serving out all the records of the same type, in this case the NS records, we just do one signature over the entire set. So if all the name server records have one signature, all the key records have one signature. Per label, of course. If it's a different label, then it gets a different signature. again, we can see the original TTL is in there. There's a signature expiration date, which is important, and a signature inception date. This means that NTP now becomes really, really important. If even your client, and if you're running the secure resource on your laptop, and your laptop has the wrong time, then it might not work. Now, in this case, we're still talking about, usually these things are signed for a month, so you're fine. But there is actually some danger that, you know, if you're an hour off, then the signature might not yet be valid, or it might just have expired if you're an hour late. The key tag is again for the humans, and then there's the key material. Sorry, the key material, the signature. Then we have a next record. Why do we need a next record? The problem is we cannot just say, like, if someone's asking for ADC.freeSpawn.ml, we just cannot say, well, it doesn't exist. We need to somehow sign our answer and saying this really doesn't exist, and here's the signature proving that nobody's lying. So what they did was they came up with the next record, which basically points to the next record in the list, in the zone, the next label, which means that first of all we have to sort our zones before signing. So we start signing our zone. So we can see here it starts with the apex. So FreeSpawn.ml is the first record, so we get all the FreeSpawn.ml records. Then the next sorted, alphabetically sorted record is in this case active or read.freeSpawn.ml. So what we do is we make one record that points, that says the next record you will expect is active or read.freeSpawn.ml, and then afterwards it lists all the records that's currently defined for the current label. So FreeSpawn.ml has an NS, a SOA, an MX, a SIG, a key, and a next record. And the next entry in the zone is active.freeSpawn.ml. Now, if you would be asking, like, give us the whatever information, give us the A record on ADC.freeSpawn.ml, we would get this next record back, basically telling us, you know, the previous record is that, the next record is that, yours is not in there. And of course, this next record can be signed, so we get a signed record back saying, you know, your data really isn't here, it doesn't exist. Again, VeriSign is very upset with this because this means there are lots of new records for them. So they first came with an optimization called opt-in, which basically said, well, let's just point to the next secure record, because if you're VeriSign and you're on a top-level domain, you just don't want to put a next record to, you know, the next domain. You go from a.com to b.com, and if b is not secure, well, there's no point in pointing to b.com because it's insecure anyway. So they propose, like, let's point to the first secure one. So let's say that d.com is the first secure one, then the next record for a.com would point to d, and would skip b and c. Because, you know, people aren't interested in that anyway if you're doing secure resolving. So that actually gives VeriSign a few more years to slowly get bigger machines, actually get, by the time that everything is secure by DNSSEC, to actually hold the entire zone. And then there's yet another problem with the next zones, with the DS records that they fixed. That's basically said, well, let's ditch this whole plan, let's ditch the next record thing, and just say, you know, the next is elsewhere, and just not point to a next record, and not sort alphabetically. But that's very experimental, that's from the last couple of weeks, and there's only unreleased snapshot code from IETF, so I haven't seen it. And I don't know much about it. The only problem is that if this system and the old system are going to work together, then we need to differentiate them, which basically means that you need to know if a key record belongs to the older or the newer system, so they come up with key 2 and SIG 2 records. So to recap, this is the very limited FreeSpawn.ml zone. It just got the apex, and names of a record, an A record, and an NX record. Now, if we get this secured, then we'll see, I hope it's somewhat readable. First of all, we see that on the previous slide, we had the www record before the mail NX record. Here it has been sorted, and you can see there's a SOA record and the signature of the SOA record. There's two names of records, one signature over names of record. There's one MX, signature over the MX. There are two keys, and you see the two signatures. I'll explain that later. Actually, the set of two keys has been signed twice with two different keys here. We'll see the next one, the next record, which is signed, and then it switches to the next label, and then the whole story repeats again. Okay, so now we'll get to the point of delegation. Now we've got one secure zone, it's really good. But now how do we get to this zone? Because our parent does not have our key. Our parent cannot sign anything, and we do not want to give the parent some data that might later be obsolete, or we need to continuously check the data with the parent to see if they still have our latest key record. So the parent cannot sign anything for the child, but it has to point to the child. So we have to have some way of securely pointing to the child, because if the parent just points into nowhere, and then we go at someplace else and we get new key records, and we have no clue whether or not those key records are in fact the real key records of the zone. So basically, just like the previous solution to give some glue when needed, we're now giving some cryptographic glue when needed. So we get the DS record. The DS record basically says this is a hash of the key of the child zone. So, and then it gives the normal glue or the normal names of records. And so once you get to the child, you ask for the key record, you check the hash, and then you know whether or not you have been sent to the right place. And of course, this hash has been signed by the key of the parent. So if you trust the parent's key, you trust the hash. So you ask for the key of the child, you check the hash of that key. If they match, you trust the key of the hash. You trust the key of the child. And we've moved one step down. Did this make any sense? I'll show it in a diagram there. And of course the DS record is signed, as you can see there. So in the ideal world, we only need one, only VeriSign or ICANN needs to have one key, and then from there on we'll go trust everything. In the real world already, because NL is the first experiment that's actually rolled out anything that you can work with at this moment, we already have like a key entry point that's different from the root. And that's how things will be in practice as well. We've got secure entry points where you say this key belongs to this zone and everything below it will be securely resolved. There's another problem we have is, of course, if there's only one key, there's quite some communication going on. If every month I want to change my key because, you know, large keys are strong but are CPU intensive, so we want to have like small keys that we can reasonably quickly deal with. Keys can be stolen, they can be bad. Once in a while it's good to replace your key, but you don't want to keep talking to the parent every 30 days in some sort of out-of-bound message transfer. So we want to do this inbound as well. That's where there's actually a two-key setup. So now we're going to make two keys per zone, and that's actually what you saw on the previous slide. One is the zone signing key, which we use to sign our zone. And one is the key signing key, which we use to only sign the key records in that zone. So for the FreeSign NL zone, we put in two keys. The zone signing key and the key signing key. The key signing key signs the two keys in one go. Then the zone signing key signs the entire zone. Now, the DS record from the parent can only point to one key, and it points to the key signing key. Now, the key signing key we can make very strong. We can keep for, say, a year. And then we can cycle our zone signing key ourselves without telling the parent, because our key signing key is still signed by the parent. And the key signing key signs the zone signing key in our zone, so we follow the path of trust there. So we add one key, but thereby we can roll over our own zone keys very quickly if we want to. So I've tried to actually put this in in a slide. It's fairly tricky to do, and there's not software that helps you, but every couple of months someone figures out that there's a problem with the key rollover, and people haven't thought about, you know, keys that are still out there and still have a TTL for a couple of days or other problems. It's a pretty complex matter. So the current system more or less is like normal situation. When you have your keys, you have two keys, the key signing key, zone signing key. Now, if you want to roll over your zone signing key for a new one every month, you basically, at the parent, you see nothing changes because we still keep the key signing key and we still have a DS over the key signing key. On the child, what you do is you add the second key. So from normal to prepare, you see that we've added the second zone signing key and we already sign it. We make sure that the key signing key signs both the old and the new zone signing key, so that if people end up somewhere with somewhat old data or cache data, it still works. Once we've run this for at least TTL time, but maybe a day or longer, we can then remove the old key, and then we only have the key signing key and the new zone signing key. The key signing key also needs to be rolled over after a while, so after a year, depending on how strong you make it. That's a bit more complex because now you see that the DS record has to change. So we're adding a new key signing key, KSK2. We sign still with KSK1 because that's where the DS records point to. We cannot sign the keys with something else. Zone signing key doesn't change at all. Then once we have everything signed with the key signing key, with the new one, let's see, I think this is actually wrong. I know, the key signing key, the first key signing key signs everything. Then when you switch with key signing key 2 and the DS at the same time. And then it doesn't matter what KSK1's out, as long as you keep it in for a while for the cached records. And if your key is stolen, then you really have a problem. If you deploy DNSSEC, you better have a procedure ready for what happens when your key is lost or stolen, because you will be in a panic. You need to inform everyone who's using your key as a secure entry point to tell them to change keys. It would be a good thing if you have a spare key in your zone signed already so that you can instantly switch without needing to wait for the TTL to expire. If you don't have that, well, what are you going to do for the time the TTL still lives? There's still signed data out there that might be wrong or made by someone else. It's a good thing to have a spare key signing key somewhere that if it's needed, if you're compromised, you can instantly switch. But it's already difficult enough as it is right now with just the regular keys to start adding keys as well. Okay, now the practical side. To do all this yourself, basically first you need to install the latest bind snapshot, which is very unstable, which you should not put on your DNS server. You should only put it on your signing machine, which is of course a very secure machine. You configure with OpenSSL. For Linux, at least, you have to disable threads because they broke it. There are things to know that you should already not be using. Host and MS lookup should already be programmed. You should not be using anymore. If you really like the host output compared to the horrible dig output like me, you can put plus DNS, you can put plus multiline in your dig RC. As of the, I think that's only in the snapshot code, yeah. And then you get a real nice output, which I'll show in a second. If you want to do DNSSEC queries, then you add plus DNSSEC for dig as well. So your signer machine should be the bleeding edge bind. Your name server can be just a stable bind 8 or bind 9 server. The stable binds are perfectly able to serve DNSSEC records. They're just not able to properly sign. But that's okay, because name servers are not signing machines. Name servers just serve our data. And even if a name server gets compromised, even in a DNSSEC world, it doesn't matter, it matters, but it cannot send out false data because people will reject the data because it's not properly signed. recommend to actually create, if you do this manually, which I recommend against, but just for playing, to do one or two zones. The NSIP gen, you can select the algorithm, you select the bit size, you select the zone for which it is. You get a key file. In this case, we'll generate two, because one we use for the key signing key and one for the zone signing key. We get two key records, and two key files and two private files. The private files are the private keys. Do not put them in the DNS. The key files are the public keys. You want to put them in the DNS. They are nicely formatted, so you can just concatenate them to your current zone. Increase the serial number, and you can then use DNSSEC sign zone to actually sign the zone. And then you upload it to your main server, restart, and you can test. I'll demonstrate the SecRec after this. So this is what you see when you run dig. You can see on the top line, okay, you can read the command line. Plus dig plus DNSSEC plus multi-line minus T, A record, www, fnl.nl, and add, and then we use a secure resolver from the Dutch NIC. We can see that we get back an A record with the IP number, a signature, and in this case you can see the AD bit, I've tried to circle around it, that says that it's authenticated data. So this is how a typical query would look from dig if you do a DNSSEC query. The problem with VeriSign is that they're still using an old setup with code that is no longer in the latest bind snapshot because people figured it was wrong and moved on. But VeriSign hasn't updated the experiment yet to use the new DS record. So it's, yeah, I haven't used it yet. I'm hoping that they're actually updated and that I don't need to figure out how the old system works. I mean, the latest bind snapshot no longer supports it. If you want to deploy many zones, there have been some tools written by people. There's some Perl tools in CPAN. There's DNSSEC main to DNSSEC main zone from Olaf from WebMCC, which he's about to release, but you should be able to get it from his website any day now. And I'll demonstrate how you can do many keys, but basically you can see there's a shell prompt from within a tool that Olaf Goldman from Wright made, where you can easily create a zone, keep the zones and the keys in separate files, combine and sign as needed, and then do easy rollovers without actually having to edit the zone file and do all these things manually. Be careful if you're using bind8 name servers for this, because if your signature, that's a new thing, right? The signature has an expiration date. If the signature expires, then the DNS data is invalid. The difference between bind8 and bind9 is that bind8 then is so clever that it removes the data from your zone. While bind9 says, well, you know, you better check the signature is invalid, I'm just serving the zone. So if you're just messing around a little bit, try it out, generate a key for 30 days, put it on your bind8 server, forget about it. 30 days later, your zone will be empty. So either use a stable bind9, or better be sure that you update your signatures before they expire. Some changes in the organization that you'll be facing is the nice, easy way of whatever manually editing your zone file or putting records through MySQL databases and in your name server suddenly vanishes. You know, not 100 people can either just add a new record for a customer. Because this is now the responsibility of a very secure signing machine. If you give 100 people access to your signing machine, the whole point of the DNSSEC becomes rather moot. So it should be a really secure machine. But you will be depending on it as well, so you better be sure that it works. For instance, 2 days ago I was preparing the last things on these slides, and the DNSSEC signing machine was in someone's car on the road driving to Amsterdam. You're stuck. You cannot sign. You cannot do anything. You cannot change your own DNS data anymore. So you better be sure that you, one, have a copy of everything securely and make sure that machine is reachable. Applications for DNSSEC. I hope I'll be able to show it now. But there is finally a first real-world application. FreeSwan, the IPsec stack for Linux, now has DNSSEC support, which means it can set up an IPsec tunnel based on a DNS name, a DNS key record. I'll show that after this bit. Other cool application for DNSSEC, of course, is to store things securely. That's why everyone wants to use DNSSEC. DNSSEC itself is not a public key infrastructure, but the things that you can put in, you can actually use to create a public key infrastructure. Like, well, there's been a patch for OpenSSH to actually get key records from DNSSEC to, you know, get past the known host. Are you sure you want to connect to this host thing? The DH client will soon support things as well, because it needs to do dynamic updates, it needs to do it securely, and again, this is important for people who want to say, you know, phone home, say where they are, and actually put some DNS records in there to point people to their current mobile location. And because of the next record, normally all these big zones like .com are sort of like secret, like nobody's supposed to know the whole zone for whatever marketing or security reasons. With DNSSEC, of course, you can just ask for the first record and start walking the whole zone. But people tend to see that because DNSSEC is not yet widely deployed. I put all the references here together. They're in the slide book, so I'll skip that right now. I'll just do a demo further on. Like I said in the beginning, I'm interested in DNSSEC because I want to do IPsec based on opportunistic encryption. The goal is to have host-to-host encryption for everyone using IPsec, where we get the key material for the IPsec tunnel in the DNS in a secure way. So I'll first demonstrate the Dutch system. So this is the web interface of the secure registry of NICML. Basically what you can do is you can ask for status of a domain, and I removed one so that I could actually show it. Let's see if I still have my GPS connection. There we go, it says that one's not secure. If I, for instance, go to ask for this one, and all, you'll see that the way they've set it up is that NICML uses a separate security contact, which is responsible for all the key exchanges, the outbound key exchanges on the first exchange. Okay. Now, to secure a domain in the Dutch registry, first of all, of course, you have to set up the two keys, your zone signing key and your key signing key, and then you can actually go to make secure. Of course, people will notice that this is not a secure HTTP connection. The SECREC contact. And it does a query on the name server. Then it sees that there are two keys. The small one is the zone signing key. The larger one is the key signing key. So basically put it in. Of course, this procedure is somewhat insecure. Anyone can spoof these connections to these keys, because right now we're not using DNSSEC. But since NICML has a fairly insecure procedure to begin with anyway, this wasn't actually decreasing the security at this point. We are moving to PGP authentication, where you can actually get with PGP in a later stadium. So now mail has been sent, the next reload, they'll have a DS record published in the parent zone pointing to the... So that's a fairly nice system. There's some inverted tool that shows it somewhat nice way. You can... So you see here, we have a secure www.freeswan.nl, and I've configured a trusted key, so a secure entry point for .nl. So it gets keys, and actually it sees that there are three keys in the NL zone, not one. It only trusts the 6869 key because that's the one that's trusted. But because that one signed all the other keys, it now trusts all the keys in there. There's also the DS record there, that's been signed by that key, so it trusts the hash. Then we'll go down. We get to, let's see. We actually get to the zone where the FreeSwan NL zone where there are two keys. One of them is the zone signing key, the other is the key signing key. They see that this one is trusted through the DS record, and that actually signs the other key, so now both keys become trusted. And since the second key, which is the zone signing key, is trusted, the signature on this record is actually trusted, and therefore we are secure. With the tools that Olaf wrote from Vibe, we can also write some simple shell script around it, which I did here, which you can see the first part updates the serial numbers, the second part signs the zone and works around some bugs. But I'll demonstrate it, so it gives you an idea of how quickly or how slow this actually runs. This is now going to sign 150 zones on a Pentium 3, 800 I think, or 700. And you see that apart from the bug in one of the Perl modules for long records, you'll see that it takes a few seconds per zone. So this takes quite a while. So NL, the NL zone takes about 4 hours to sign. Also, if you do this on a laptop in a train, then you actually run out of RAM before you run out of battery, I noticed. Okay, well then, the only thing I have left to show is the actual implementation of FreeSwan that's using DNSSEC. As you can see, it's a very new box. As anyone can see, it's a Red Hat box. Now, what you see is the plain Penguin. There's no secure Penguin here, because right now I do not have IPsec enabled on my laptop, which means that I'm not talking to that machine. The machine tries to set up an opportunistic encryption-based IPsec tunnel to me, therefore queries the DNS for the IP number here. It doesn't find any records it can use, falls back to plain text mode, and just gives me plain text connection. Because I'm now dialed in with a GPRS to a local ISP, I have no clue what IP number I have no control of my reverse zone. It's not secure, there's nothing I can do with it there. What the FreeSwan project did was they trick the vendor ID code to actually send, they trick the ID that you can give in an IPsec connection to use a fully qualified domain name, which you can then look up in the DNS, and of course in the DNS secure zone. So what I'll do now is I'll start my opportunistic encryption. To trigger the server to talk to me so that we can see how long it takes. Now it takes a bit longer because now my laptop is actually looking for DNS records on the remote end for the machine untappable. It sees that untappable advertises in its reverse DNS that, I can do encryption, this is my key. Now I just need to tell untappable who I am because I don't have a key in my reverse. told the remote server who I am, then it can look it up in a DNS, and if that's secure, I can actually use it. See, now I have a connection, so now if I... just put some debug info on that port. We can see that it found my DNS identity at violet.xdnet and all. It did set up a tunnel, which I can show here. It's this connection. I have an IPsec tunnel. However, on top of it, it's telling me at this point that it couldn't establish a DNS set identity for me. So even though it's setting up based on a DNS record and the key I published in the DNS, it's doing so with knows, you know, this is not really secure, this could be someone else. That's because currently untappable xdnetnl does not trust the DNS set of xdnetnl because it wasn't configured with that key. I will change that key to another one. I'm starting the OpenSSH encryption bit, and I will ping again. This time, my laptop will actually initiate an opportunistic encryption to the other side again, just like before, because it still sees that the DNS is there. But now the other end should see that I'm coming from DNSSEC. The reason this sometimes in the beginning fails actually is that my laptop is doing some DNS requests, which in itself trigger the mechanism to see if we can do opportunistic encryption to the name server, for which it will first do a DNS request, which of course fails because we're still not connecting to the name server. So this only happens when you actually start up and you're not running your name server, you haven't put your name server in the clear there. Now resolved, now it's doing the IPsec negotiation. And it seems to be not working.